presentation is loading, you'll notice that I am not Dan Gordon. I'm presenting on his behalf because he did not receive travel approval to come to Alaska. This work is his brainchild, and it really would not have been possible without his expertise or the contribution of our co-authors. I am a poor substitute. I'm just going to say that outright. So here's a quick outline of my presentation, Dan's presentation. So some background about HIV in New York State. The first cases in New York, I'm on the wrong slide. The first cases in New York of what became known as AIDS were reported in 1981, so we have an old epidemic. In New York State, AIDS diagnoses peaked in the early 90s at nearly 15,000 cases and have declined steadily since then with the highly effective treatments. Named HIV reporting in New York State began in June of 2000, and prior to this, only AIDS cases were reportable by name. From the onset of HIV case reporting, new HIV diagnoses have declined dramatically and declined annually. Between 2002 and 2014, new diagnoses decreased by 56%. At the end of 2014, we have about 113,000 people living with a diagnosis of HIV in New York State. Over the last decade, Over the next decade, there has been a substantial decrease in the number of new HIV diagnoses among all transmission risk groups, with the exception of men who have sex with men. That's the purple line across the top. It's really showing no change at all. In this presentation, I will focus on the diagnosis rates among MSM, in particular, the differences across MSM who were born in different birth cohorts. So I'll review some data source details. The HIV data presented here come from the combined HIV surveillance systems of the New York State Health Department and the New York City Health Department. By state law, HIV reporting is to the State Health Department, and we work collaboratively with New York City, who conducts surveillance in the five boroughs through a memorandum of understanding with the State Health Department. We combine at the state level and unduplicate data from the state and city separate installations of EHARs to produce the statewide analysis file. In this analysis, we are looking at people born between 1965 and 1990. The 2000 census population has been selected for the calculation of rates because it represents the at-risk population in the state in the mid-range of the years when these cohorts were likely engaging in the risk behaviors that led to a diagnosis of HIV infection. As you may have noticed in slide 5, new diagnoses whose transmission risk cannot be established comprise about 16% of the total new diagnoses. These cases with unknown or no identified risk must be reallocated to known risk groups in order to calculate risk-specific ratios. And because of the strict CDC case definitions, male cases are actually more likely to be without a transmission risk category than female cases. And as such, male cases with unknown transmission risk were proportionately redistributed across known risk categories within year of birth, year of diagnosis, and race ethnicity. So that, in effect, is controlling for these variables as well as the surveillance system characteristics at the time of diagnosis. So the impetus for this study comes from three places. First, observations from our own surveillance data. We have been seeing increases in diagnoses among young MSM, particularly young MSM of color. So we started with some initial observations. Secondly, we became aware of a recent cohort related study from Seattle. And thirdly, CDC's quantification of race ethnic disparities in HIV infection status. And I'm going to speak a little bit about each of those leading up to our analysis. So first, our analysis from surveillance data. For cases with MSM transmission risk, we saw increases in the diagnoses in the 13 to 19 year old age group. That's the light blue, it's the lowest line. And the 20 to 24 year olds, the red line age groups. The 13 to 19-year age group stabilized in the late 2000s and then began declining. The 20 to 24-year age group also stabilized around 2010. In contrast, the 25 to 29-year-old age group, that's the darker blue line, also rose starting in the early 2000s, does not appear to have stabilized. And the next age group, the green line, so the 30 to 34-year-olds, initially decreased, but then we start seeing increases in 2011. There is a suggestion in these curves that for each successive age group, the rise and peak is shifted a few years to the right. In other words, the birth cohorts that formed the rise and high point for one age group or one age range also contributed to the rise of the next age group a few years later, when they themselves were a few years older. To investigate this further, we looked at total HIV diagnoses by year of birth across transmission category. So for all age groups, there's a clear rise in the total diagnoses across birth year followed by a decrease. So the birth years are across the x-axis. For example, for cases with injection drug use, that's the blue line that peaks, the highest number of diagnoses were seen among those born in between 1952 and 1956. The heterosexual risk cases, the green line, peaked with the 1960 through 1964 birth cohort. For MSM risk cases, and this is the red line, the peak occurred among those born 1961 to 1965. However, in contrast to all other risk groups, the number of MSM diagnoses stopped declining with one particular birth cohort, 1975, and remain unchanged through about the 1996 birth cohort. The flatness of the red MSM curve needs to be interpreted. As of September 2015, that's the data that we're using, the 1975 and 1985 cohorts had about the same number of new diagnoses, but men born in 1975 were 40 years old, 10 years older than those men who were born in 1985, who were only 30. Thus, MSM born in the 1975 age group or cohort had 10 more years to become both infected and diagnosed compared to their younger counterparts. So all other things being equal, we might expect that the 1985 birth cohort may surpass the 1975 birth cohort. So this suggested that we should look more closely at MSM risk diagnosis history in different birth cohorts. And while we were doing this, we became aware of the work of our colleagues in the Seattle and King County Department of Public Health and the University of Washington. So this slide was adapted from one kindly supplied from the co-authors of the Seattle cohort study and shows cumulative risk of HIV diagnosis by age for white MSM in King County, Washington, for the estimated MSM population in each five-year age cohort. The highest risk was seen in the 1960 to 1964 birth cohort, that's this blue line at the top, where about 42% of MSM born in this period were diagnosed with HIV by the time they turned 52. Lifetime risk for the next five-year age group, those people born 1965 to 1969, that's the orange line in the middle of the chart, is much lower, rising to 30% at age 47. The next cohort, 1970 to 1974 birth years, the turquoise line lower in the middle, is lower still. The relative curves of the following cohorts are harder to distinguish, as the overall numbers are quite small. The lesson of this slide is that the lifetime experiences in terms of the risk of HIV diagnosis varies dramatically across birth cohorts, and that the risk for the most recent few cohorts appears successively lower than their immediate predecessors. The third impetus for this study was CDC's analysis that was presented at this year's CROI of the question of lifetime risk of diagnosis across transmission risk groups. Using national diagnosis data from 2009 through 13, CDC estimated a 1 in 6 lifetime risk of HIV diagnosis for MSM and far lower lifetime risk for other transmission groups or risk groups. Note that to make these lifetime risk calculations, CDC estimated the total size of the MSM and IDU population in the U.S. So moving into our analysis, the slides that I will be displaying are showing a cumulative lifetime diagnosis rate across birth cohorts, so 1965 through 1990. It's important to note that we elected to not further calculate the number of MSM in the population in order to calculate the rates as diagnoses per 100,000 MSM. Our rates are based on the total population, not MSM, although other studies, including Seattle's and CDC's, did use that more refined denominator. This is a really busy slide. So the figure shows cumulative MSM risk diagnosis rates for the 5 New York State birth cohorts starting from 1965, ending with the cohort born in 1990. These are big cohorts, so between 120,000 and 160,000 men. And the number of diagnoses recorded is also large. The number of diagnoses per birth cohort year is in the box at the end of the line. So the 1965 birth cohort has just over 3,000 diagnoses. The 1990 birth cohort has about 580 diagnoses. So starting with the 1965 birth cohort, that's the blue line at the top, we see that at every point it is higher than the line for the 1970 cohort, and that's the red line just below. While we don't yet have the diagnosis data through age 49 for the 1970 birth cohort, they just simply aren't that old yet, it is clear that barring some tremendous surprise, lifetime risk for the 1970 birth cohort will be around 25% lower than the 1965 birth cohort. You can just extend the lines through the chart. The 1975 cohort, that's the green line, also runs lower than the 1970 cohort at every age. The 1980 cohort, the purple line kind of in the middle, however, appears to be running a little higher than 1975. The decline in the cumulative diagnosis rates that we see from 1965 through 1975 does not appear to continue with men born in 1980. The 1985 cohort, that's the light blue line in the middle, in turn runs clearly higher than the 1980 birth cohort. And looks to be even higher than the 1970 birth cohort. Lastly, the 1990 birth cohort, so the youngest men in this study, while still quite young and with relatively few years of risk history, seem to be on track to be at least as high as the 1985 birth cohort. In summary, what we see is that the marked decline in cumulative diagnosis rates that we observed for the 1965 through 75 birth cohorts appears to have stopped with the 1980 birth cohort and reversed with the 1985 and 1990 cohorts. In the next few slides, I'm going to be displaying how this plays out across New York State's major race and ethnic groups. The overall pattern among black men is the same as the total male population. So it's high among those born in 1965 and declines through 1975, although the relative declines are a little bit smaller. For example, the difference between 1970 and 1965 is around 20%. It was 25% for the general population. The decline also stops with the 1980 birth cohort and is reversed with the 85 and 90 birth cohorts. Among Hispanics, there's a similar picture, although there's an indication that the reversal set in a little bit earlier. Note that 1980 really does seem higher than the 1975 birth cohort here. Moreover, the reversal in 1985 is stronger. And unlike blacks, 1990 appears to be on course to track even higher than the 1985 birth cohort. Among white males, the situation is quite different. 1980 is not higher than 1975 at any point, as it was among blacks and Hispanics. 1985 may be running a little higher than 1980 and 1970, but not by much. and there is no indication, at least not yet, that the diagnosis rate among those born in 1990 will be higher than the earlier birth cohorts. Thus, among blacks, Hispanics, and whites, the decline in diagnosis rates clearly stopped with the 1980 cohort. It is only among blacks and Hispanics that we observe a reversal of this trend, with some indication that the reversal is stronger and a little bit earlier among Hispanic men. It is worthwhile at this point to display these curves side by side for a direct comparison. So presented here are those the same slides that were just displayed individually, but they're on the same scale. The differences in cumulative rates across these three groups are striking. These figures are consistent with CDC's observation in their recent presentation at CROI that at current rates, 1 in 6 MSM will be diagnosed with HIV in their lifetime, including 1 in 2 black MSM, 1 in 4 Latino MSM, and 1 in 11 white MSM. So to summarize what I presented so far, in New York State, cumulative risk of HIV diagnosis in the MSM transmission group has declined across successive birth cohorts through 1975. The trend reversed with the 1980 birth cohort and increased with the 1985 and 1990 birth cohorts. We also observed profound differences across race and ethnic groups. Whoops. So here we compare the diagnosis. I updated the slide, but it didn't go away. So here we compare the diagnosis rate for each cohort across race and ethnic groups. We focus on the rate for the oldest age of each birth cohort. So the 1965 birth cohort, the oldest age of men in that cohort in 2014 was 49 years of age. So for that birth cohort, the 1965 birth cohort, the black rate is nearly 4 times higher than the white rate, and the Hispanic rate is 3 times higher. These disparities alone are disturbing, but the disparities actually increase with each successive birth cohort. The black-white ratio is 3.8 for the 1965 birth cohort. It grows to 5.7 for the 1980 cohort. The Hispanic-white ratio grows from 3.0 to 4.1. Stunningly, though, for the 1990 cohort, the cumulative MSM risk diagnosis rate among blacks is 12 times higher than whites, and the Hispanic ratio is nearly 10 times higher. So the large and growing disparities across the race ethnic groups plays into the observation that the timing and the size of the reversal in the trend was also different across groups. In the earlier birth cohorts, 1965, 1975 birth cohorts, there was a smaller drop among the minority populations, and the stop occurred a little earlier, and the reversal was a little bit stronger. So in conclusion, in New York State, the youngest MSM cohorts, especially those of color, appear to be at greater risk of HIV infection than those just a few years older. Prevention activities directed at these specific age and race groups are urgently needed to prevent a return of infection levels that have not been seen since the early years of the epidemic. Any questions?
Since there's no moderator, ask a question. Those were very striking numbers on the disparities between the races, and that, I guess, was in the cumulative effect.
Yes.
That did you guys take a look at if there have been changes in the racial disparities, trying to take into account the same ages of those age cohorts?
Dan may have done that, but I've not seen that yet. I'll definitely bring that comment
back. It'd be interesting
back
to see if it's diverging. So, like,
right,
if you were comparing the 30-year-olds to the 30-year-olds,
yep,
was
yep,
it a
how
certain
different
percent?
Are they?
But the cumulative effect,
right?
Because it's, you know, it's sort of the compounding interest problem that of being
exactly.
a slightly higher proportion
mm-hmm.
and give it 30 years, it has a huge impact on the overall
right.
effect.
Yeah, yeah, but that's a great suggestion.
Fascinating stuff, thank you.
Yeah, it's horrifying stuff.
Hi, I'm Emily with Texas DSHS, and we've found similar racial disparities in Texas,
mm-hmm.
some even larger in some areas.
Yeah.
What we've struggled with is how to communicate the differential risk without feeling... We've gotten feedback from the community from several focus groups
right.
that Black and Hispanic MSM feel like, when you give us these statistics, what? How
yeah.
are we supposed to feel, and what are we supposed to do with them?
Right.
So what has New York found in looking at how to communicate it?
So that's definitely a next step. We've presented these data to our new AIDS director, and that really is the challenge: how to use these information like this without overly or further stigmatizing any particular group. What we do, I was thinking during the first presentation, many of the men in New York State who are on PrEP are non-Hispanic white. And it's not that they don't need PrEP, but others may need it more. Any final questions from the back of the room?
Bridget, I'm Brittany from D.C. I was just curious as to whether you looked at it geographically. To see
we
if
did not yet.
You didn't yet? And
correct.
Then the secondary question kind of goes along with the comment you were just saying. I was going to ask about PrEP, particularly with MSM of color, and if there had been any outreach or any sort of public campaigns or anything along those lines that would help educate about PrEP and about the opportunities for PrEP, particularly in minority communities.
Right. So in New York State, we also have an Ending the Epidemic campaign, and it's really based on three pillars. All of these Ending the Epidemic campaigns are very similar. Get people who are infected but not diagnosed diagnosed, link them to care, get them retained in care so that they get on treatment and are suppressed, and for people who aren't infected, get them on PrEP. So the state has actually been blanketed with PrEP information, and there's a lot of effort through the contractors who work with specific population subgroups to get that message out. It is uneven, though, and so that is it's a very important challenge, and translating the surveillance data into the prevention messaging is huge. Maybe that's why they're combining the FOAs.